Hey everybody, it's Mark Pattison back with another great episode of Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way. Before we get to our great guest today, I do want to remind people, go check out my website. It's new, it's fresh. I got a bunch of great stuff, bunch of great content. It's up there at www.markpattisonnfl.com. I've got a book with the same name, Finding Your Summit, coming out in January. It's going to be amazing. I've gone like 35 re-edits. I've been at this for 2 years. So it does document a lot of highlights of my life, Mount Everest, the seven summits, playing the NFL, running Sports Illustrated, things like that. Also goes down and talks about a lot of valleys, which we all go through, transitions where you get bumped in the head and you got to figure out a way to pick yourself back up. I'm also out there on the circuit keynote. If you need me to come in and speak to your group, let me know. Also have a free PDF download called What's Your Everest. Everybody's got their own goals and what they want to do. And you can get in there and it documents how you accomplish different things. Okay, on that note, let's get into my amazing guest. I've been on his podcast like 43 times. His name is Steve Azar. Steve, how you doing?
Hello, Brother Mark. How are we feeling?
How's the Delta?
Well, it misses you a little bit, actually. But it's good, you know, getting through the holidays and getting into the new year. Everything that we're doing, always good to make it to the next one. So next chapter, 2026. But yeah, it's been good. And we've been very, very busy. I mean, I feel like I'm spending more time making music and playing than I did in my heyday. So sort of a resurgence, a new hope, I guess, stack crop load of hay. It's awesome. In my later wonder years, you know?
Yeah, so let's talk about that a minute, because it's going to talk about longevity in a second, but I just want to set this up for the listener. So Steve Azar and I have been buddies for a long time. We originally met when I was playing for the New Orleans Saints, and then we'd go up. Steve's originally from the great state of Mississippi. I go down there every year and participate in the Delta Soul golf tournament. We raise a bunch of money, and I've been doing this 6 or 7 years in a row, and every year I say I'm not going back because it's so hard to get there, and then Steve talks and doing. I go back there and I have a great time. I'll be back again this next year, I promise.
Love it.
But Steve, back in his day, and even currently today, continues, like you just said, continue to make music. But there's a lot of like really amazing songs that he's pumped out over his career. Waiting on Joe, One Mississippi, Sunshine, which is my favorite. I don't have to be me till Monday, things like that. I'm actually wearing his shirt right now underneath my jacket with the same name. But let's talk about longevity, Steve, in the music business. There are so many people out there. There's all these new artists and up-and-comers that you see on The Voice, on American Idol. You know, there's other music shows like that out there as well. But how have you been able to sustain this over, it's got to be at least 30 years when I used to come down to LSU and watch you play rock and roll up at those fraternities?
It would have been... So you saw me in the late 80s. So yeah. we start doing math. I've been doing this really pretty hardcore since I was 14.
Yeah.
So, you know, I had the garage bands, and but just didn't have a garage band. I was working. I mean, I was out playing, trying to figure it out. Went to make my first records, first songs I wrote when I was 13 or 14. Thought I was going to get a record deal then, wanted it back then. I had sports like you. I wasn't at the level we were ranked. We won a bunch of state tennis titles and was a basketball player and played every catcher in baseball. All those things were important to me while I was sort of honing my musical skills. Music was going to be the thing that I felt like I could do like you did in the NFL. Something was working and giving me a little bit of hope along the way. People were coming to my shows in large numbers when I was younger. So it sort of led me to the next step and the next step. And whenever I got to a crossroads, I was at a point where I believed and I felt like everybody, there's no way I could be wrong because people can't be wrong when they come see you. Yeah. I was getting to be a better songwriter. I went through some funky times as a songwriter. I think I was probably better younger than I was at 10 years into it. I think my instincts were better. And when I started to try to figure it out myself, I started to lead myself. It was fun. It was the one you saw, the version of me you saw, but lyrically and sort of where my voice needed to fit, I hadn't found that yet. And growing up in Mississippi, you're caught between all of these musical styles. And at some point, you got to find the honest you to make it the distance. So, yeah, I mean, but, you know, there was a lot of stops and starts, Mark. a lot of tragedy with bands and members, and finally got to the point where I started having hits. I was 37 when I had my first hits. That's a long time, but I was already doing it, and I had publishing deals and this and that. So I never stopped, but I knew I had to have hits to be able to talk to you today and be able to go, I'm still doing it. At some point, you had to matter nationwide, globally, to a certain extent. And being a regional success was only going to last so long. So I worked really hard at that part and traveled all the arenas and did all that stuff and eventually moved my family back to the birthplace of America's music here in the Mississippi Delta, where I'm many generations back. And serving as a music and culture ambassador of the state, and have the official state song after 60 years, appealing the one that was there, and you can imagine what that was like. So, big part of Mississippi history now, and our children's book is in legislature to be second grade curriculum during Read Across America Week. That's based off the state song. So, it just a whole lot of things that you would never expect to happen that you can't even go into it going like, that's what I'm gonna have happen. These things just sort of happen, as I've lived my life and gotten to build relationships and kept writing about Mississippi, and eventually it all sort of came together. Have my
So let me jump in here because you're covering a lot of ground. So,
Sorry.
it's all good. But I think one of the things that you're saying is that as you have evolved over time as a body of work and through lifetimes, and this is, I think, a message for everybody to hear, is actions create reactions. Okay. And with you, you put yourself out there, and especially when you're an artist or an athlete like me, you're putting yourself out there, and you're also putting yourself there for a lot of criticism. And you got to be thick-skinned, and you have to believe, I believe, in the core of what you are doing, that you're on the right track. And then these different things start to happen. You talked a minute ago about some tragedy that happened, early on, and I want to tie this into kind of teams and how you form bands, and because it's just not you up there playing. You got, I know you've had your one drummer, forever. It seems like that's been playing with you, but where you get the right kind of chemistry, right? I've been on teams with a lot of talented guys, and there's been a lot of situations where people aren't doing the right things, like drinking and drugs and all, and that doesn't help towards a team effort. There was one band earlier in your career that you're a part of, and I think one guy died of suicide, and there's another guy that committed murder, and you had a go off and kind of restart. And so how have you been able to kind of hone in the right team for that? Because so much of that is tied around ultimately the culture and probably the end product of what you're up on stage or creating the end product, which is a record.
It's interesting. We talked about this on my podcast yesterday. Those guys were phenomenal musicians, but they were troubled. I had my athletics friends and I had my musician friends. They weren't the same people. Now I've got the same people in the band. They're all one thing. And I guess the way to explain it is, you've got 80% of what you want, because they can get together and play and do all this stuff. But there's that extra 20% that is the defining factor of the difference between greatness and really good. And that group that becomes great, that extra 20%, to me, and then finding the perfect fit, not maybe necessarily the best percussionist in the world, but amazing. Not necessarily the best guitar player in the world, but amazing. They fit what I'm doing. And I'd put them up against anybody, but I put them up against anybody with me. And so you got to realize 31 years with my percussionist background, vocal, Jason, sidekick, all my records, everything. Chris Schiltz has been with me 26 years, my guitar player, but he was my guitar tech because my guitar player retired. And so he just filled in the slot. Rudy's been with me, my drummer, 22 years. And then that drummer before, my Italian drummer, who's Cecilia, our daughter's godfather, he retired. So I got to a point when I was in Nashville where I really found the magic dust of these guys, and I love them so much. And I think as you get a little older and wiser, and it becomes really easy to detect who else will fit with you that feels like they've been with me that long. And that's when I did my Kingsmen record with some of BB's guys when BB passed, and all that. They and Little Milton's, some of those guys ended up becoming part of this band. that I have down here now. And so it's sort of a hodgepodge of it all. And man, I got to tell you, it needs no rehearsal. It's the weirdest thing. These guys just get it. And so it's easy is the best way I can explain it. Making records is easy with them. Playing live is easy with them. And it's like it's a joy. I mean, and when you get a curveball, you call an audible, everybody's on the same page with the audible.
Well, again, tying this back into kind of teams and leadership, after running Sports Illustrated for 10 years, it's not always the best and the best and the best. It who is the most versatile? And another thing that kicks into it in my book is where does effort play into all this? I just had this conversation with Jim Mora, and we're talking about, there are some guys that are the kind of entitled five-star type guy that maybe doesn't work nearly as hard as a two or three-star or no-star guy, but works his ass off. Because he has to overachieve time and time and again. And that's just the way his mindset's always been, because he hasn't been that superstar, but maybe he's a better fit as a leader for the team, just like what you're describing, for the band.
Well,
So
they're best for like the guys in my band are best for me. So so on a team, I imagine you've seen it all, and you're saying it. Look, you take somebody a five star that works as hard as the guy that's the three star. Well, the five star is going to probably be going to win out. The question is, will you work as hard as that three star? I mean, because where do you go after five? I mean, I don't have a 5.5. So, what do you do after that is the question. And you know as well as I do, music's the same way. I was probably a three star. I guess if you put that star on me graduating high school and into college, I probably by the time I graduated college, I was close to a four star. And then things really had to heat up, and I had to really go to work. So I get it. I get it.
yeah, one of the things, one of my kind of classic sayings is, and I've had this way back when, it was one of my coaches who's since passed back way back when I was a freshman at the University of Washington, Coach Ray Doerr, but he used to always say, it takes a little more to make a champion. And so, that's that extra, right? And that competitive greatness, which is really, and I think this is really where you fall in when you start talking about competitive greatness. John wouldn't originally, term that from term of success. And what that really means is that you love the process. And I know that you love the process. I've seen you up on stage. And I think that's one of your, there you are. I think that's one of your best qualities, and probably one of the things that has sustained you over time, that when you're up on stage doing the same, I mean, I can only imagine how many song times in your life you've played Waiting on Joe and all these other songs that you got out of these, you've got a number of staples that you got to sing every single time, because that's what keeps people coming back in. You know that. But you play it with the same amount of joy as you did way back when I've seen you 10 years ago, or when, when. So that also helps sustain, I think, anybody in their business or what their hobby is or whatever they're trying to achieve, especially as we're talking about right now. We're on, we're you and I are recording this at the tail end of 2025, and now we're going to go into 2026. And what can you find that joy and happiness and the things that you do that's going to like be the super power to get you over the edge and the sustain? I mean, you're in your 60s now, just like me. I can't believe it. But and I
It's
want to
not true, but
yeah, but I want to talk about this for a minute, which is again, going back to how do you sustain yourself and thrive? You probably have no desire to retire like me, but yet you've got the One Mississippi song, which I love, and that's become the state song, as you mentioned earlier in the intro. That's one. And then you are constantly in the, maybe it's the region down in New Orleans and places like that, for these people bringing you in to
lot going on.
play, right? With the riverboats and all that kind of stuff.
Well, we got the number one show on the Mississippi River for 3 out of 3 years. And we just had the highest rating in history, they said, on the last show of the 94th show. I've got a 9-year deal. It's my own resident show. I get to do all my Mississippi songs. Well, no, it would take me 4 shows to do all my Mississippi songs, but I get the chosen group. But it's so funny how life sort of take, we moved back home. It was sort of on a whim. I mean, things were really going well for me at that point in Nashville. I'd left Universal, had my first hit in a while on my own label, which was way more challenging and more satisfying than being on Universal. And because we did it on our own, and then all of a sudden, and just came off the big Bob Seger tour. It was number one in the land, and I just felt like this. We were thinking about our kids. and letting them get a shot of this Mississippi thing and the Delta, and let the, if it did anything like remotely close to what it did to me, passion-wise and fight-wise and love affair for what I do. Oldest was a filmmaker, youngest was all into culinary. They're both still doing that. And our middle son, you know, was a basketball player. He excelled here. He was a special basketball player, but ended, but he's a doctor now. I mean, the bottom line is it changed their path. Growing up in a small town also gives you opportunity. And when they were in Nashville, maybe, you know, I remember our seventh grader got cut. For the first time he had ever gotten cut from a basketball team, and that hurt him pretty bad. But then when we moved here, he became the star, and he there was nobody that was on that team that got cut that could take him on by the time he was a senior. So he worked really hard. But those are the things that gave them a chance to realize failure is going to happen, not fair is going to happen, whatever you call that. But how hard can you work past that? And I have failed so many times in my musical career, but it's like a batting average, you know? If you can bat close to 300, then you have a heck of a career. So, and also, you know, I know you talk about songs. I don't get tired of the ones that it took me forever to write. I mean, when I finally got it right, you never get tired of it. It's like you running that post pattern. How sharp can you make those cuts? How open can you get? You know, the slant, whatever it is, you know, going deep. The curl. I mean, did you ever get tired of trying to run the perfect route?
No, time
No.
and time and time and time. Yeah, no,
Yeah.
that's actually a really good point. So let me ask you this question. What you see a lot of time, so let's just go back and talk about, a couple artists like Paul McCartney or some of those guys like that. And so much, I mean, this is, you could go on and on and on with this list, so I won't, but I'm just as a big example that everybody knows who that is. And so much of the creativity, it seems like, happens when they're in their late teens and early 20s, and then they just kind of feed off that career. I'm not saying that he necessarily fed off that career because he's continuing to make music, but I'm saying that the there's this creativity explosion with some artists that happens, and then later in life it seems like some of that creativity and where these songs are going to pull out of the sky that drip down into you and then out on your guitar, and then you turn them into songs. Like, have you found that to be a anything to that slowed you down, or are you just as creative as where you were back then as you are now?
I'm more in control of the time, where it used to drive me crazy. Wake up in the middle of the night, write notes, think of all this driving, see something, hear somebody say something. It was literally all day, 24/7. You couldn't get songs out of your head. It was good, but it wasn't good. So when you got to a point where you knew that you could stop and pause and rest and let the song come to you, then the songs wrote themselves. It got way easier. So I deal with like artists. I mentor and I produce, and everything is just so more relaxed. And we don't have a clock on us. But you know, the other day I'm working on Steve Cropper, who's one of the greatest. For folks that don't know Steve Cropper, you know him, sitting on the dock of the bay, wait till the midnight hour, Green Onion, Play It, Steve from the Blues Brothers. That's Steve Cropper, Stax, Memphis, and working on a documentary with our buddy Joe Norelli, who comes to the Delta Soul, big donor and huge donor. And we were up for the Grammy record with Alice Cooper last year. And so those are the little things that keep you going, but they're big things. But no, it's the fact that I get to keep working. But a buddy of mine, James House, and I, James has written most of Joe Bonamassa's songs over the last, say, six albums, a lot of them. And then he also wrote Broken Wing for Martina McBride, I Ain't That Lonely Yet for Dwight Yoakam, In a Week or Two, all these great songs. James and I wrote probably 40 songs in a stretch in Nashville. And I called him and I said, "Hey, I got this song I got to write." They've already sent the music, which is unusual for both of us. We usually write, everything comes together, music, melody, lyrics, it all happens at one time. It gets cooked together. And so we had this melody. I said, "I have an idea. I think I hear money, money, money." And so I had sent him the text. We were going to Zoom. We had never written Zoom before, via Zoom. I swear, and he texts me this. I text him these lyrics. He texts me this. We got on Zoom. We had technical difficulty. We went over it one time that afternoon. I recorded it, sent it to him. Done. It's probably going to be in the movie and on the soundtrack. And I'm going, it took us 5 minutes. And so So I think what happens is you prepare yourself for these moments by just constantly doing it. And then when you know what you're supposed to do, the task is at hand, then you're capable of just backing up and just let it write itself. And that's what happens now. And you so sort of your mind is so clear, but it's very creative and imaginative as it was as a child. I think you go through periods where it's not, but I think if you do it long enough, then you sort of revert back to those instincts, but you've got all this knowledge. And when the two collide, then it becomes easy.
Yeah, well, you've been doing this, like you said, a long time. I can only imagine I'm kind of like, taking Tom Brady again, trying to make a football analogy out of this. But, when you've been doing it a long time and you're in your 40s in his case, and he was out there and he was quarterbacking, right when you come in, even though you're switching from New England to Tampa Bay, you're literally able to come right in and just start directing and telling people what to go and where to go, what to do. You see defenses in a certain way. And so I can only imagine when you get in the studio, you know what buttons to push and how to get this thing going and everything else. And it's very turnkey.
Yeah, it is. It's turnkey and it's quick and it's fun. So every part of the process is its own like batch of fun. So writing, it's very rewarding, and there's a lot of energy in the room. Even though if you're writing a ballad or whatever, it's exciting to do it and to let it out and to release it. And when you know you're onto something and you got something, then you go into the studio part. You're tweaking the lyrics because not until you're singing do you realize that the lyrics are all going to fit right and work. And so then you're tweaking those lyrics. Never have I gone and done a song where I haven't tweaked lyrics because that's when you hear yourself doing it, and that's fun. And then when you finally get to go out and play it live, man, that's the icing on the cake. Like it's like I said, I think Mark, I kept wanting to do it when I was failing. Because I couldn't wait to get back on stage. And I knew that I gotta play these songs on stage. I can't let those songs go away and never get to do what I did when I was younger. These songs deserve it. The ones when I was younger maybe didn't, they weren't as good, but you couldn't have told me that at the time because I believed in it. Also, there is no plan B. There's no way that you had a plan. Only way you had a plan B if you got so injured that you couldn't play anymore. I get that part. That's where you and I differ in our desires. But with me, I married the perfect woman who decided that you were going to do your thing and we'll figure it out. As Dina Carter, my dear pal, used to say, her dad was a great guitar player, and he'd come home and go, "We're having steak tonight. Next week, we're having beans. It's steak or beans." And that's the attitude you have to have in survival mode of the business. So, I mean, it's been a long time since we've had to eat beans. We love red beans and rice, by the way. And I love my beans, white chicken chili, white bean chicken chili, and all that. But what I mean is, trust me, I'm humbled and grateful that anytime we get to eat steak, so in the business. And there's been a lot of these great moments in the last 8, 10 years. And the fact that I've got my own Branson or own Vegas show, but it's all my Mississippi stuff here at a performing arts center that was part pre-flood 1927 and just post-flood, a theater that we all contribute money to help it survive. And it just happened to be the perfect size, 400 people, that is perfect for our Viking folks that come in. And also we're employing 60 people. So it's been a blessing for our community, and it's great being the best and being number one. Number one starts with every single person that's on our team, not just the show we put on, the food we put on and display. It's 100% Mississippi Delta Greenville culture. And we just sort of had the right recipe. And we also created this with Viking Cruise Line. The folks, they were great. We've had a great time. We never say no. No matter what curveball, no matter how low the water is, how high, they get to us and we make sure that we say yes all the time. So I got a very good group of folks that are able to punt and take curveballs. Well, not punt, just take curveballs and knock it out of the park when
Well,
things happen.
so one of the things you just talked about, it's interesting because this came up with somebody else the other day, and it's just like, and I think this is one of the keys to my success is that when I lock in, I don't relent, right? And I think too often, and I'm talking to business owners now, you let shiny objects come in and distract you from the overall goal. And there should be your one mission and your one mission only. And everything and all actions that you do should feed to that number one goal. For me, playing in the NFL, climbing the seven summits, making it up Mount
Yeah,
Everest.
you've done really nothing. You've been boring. Just want you to
Oh, I
know.
know that,
I mean,
but I
come
think
on, this is crazy.
I know, but look at it's just it's all. This is why I have this free. We talked about it in the beginning. You know, this free PDF workbook that I created actually about 4 years ago, and I'm just now putting it out. I don't know why, but it's called What's Your Everest, and everybody's got their own like.
Wait, I didn't know about the workbook.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. So
So is that out now?
it's going to be out in 2 days. I mean, it's done. It's already done. We're putting up on a new website
Oh,
that
I can't wait. That's awesome.
it's great though. But a lot of it is around my acronym of summits, how you accomplish things. You know, there's a seed, there's an idea, you move, you measure, you improve. Everybody is hit with something, and you got to deal with that. That's called a traverse, and ultimately you make your summit. But if you let all these other things, well, what? Come over here and check this out, or check that out, or you know, whatever. Does that feed to your ultimate goal? And that's what I'm trying to say here, right? And I think that's what you've been super successful is that I think you even honed it even more. You went off to Nashville, and then you said, "I'm going to return to the Delta down there in Greenville, Mississippi. I've been many times," and you're going to not only hone it, but you're going to improve it with really trying to incorporate that Delta soul sound, right? That
Right.
you've been able to
Yeah.
do. And it's unique, I think. I don't think it's, I think the Delta blues have been around for a long time, but this kind of influx of influence that you've had, but always with the ultimate main goal, like you said, there is no plan B.
There's no plan B. You know, it's I mean, I guess we're fooling somebody or we're not. It just, I guess you're when you're I just wish you understand what I'm talking about. I couldn't imagine. I could not imagine doing anything else in my life. If I had to do everything all over again and make the same mistakes just to get to do this, I'd take those mistakes on again. And trust me, mistakes are good for anything that we do. What do you do with them? You know, and man, I love the fact that when you've made the mistakes and you finally realize how to fix that and how to get over that obstacle that slowed you down. In our business, I made a lot of mistakes that would cost me 1 year at a time. And I look back and I go, man, a year is a long time if you do it 10 times, you know? So, and but I made them. And I'm doing a better job of making less mistakes now. I'm also very patient. I also know how to take 24 if somebody upsets me or I feel like that is the craziest thing. What is wrong with you? I take a break, take 24 hours. How do I feel in a day? And a lot of times, it's not big enough a deal to talk about, and if it still is, then I'm at least calm enough and patient enough to talk it out and work it out. And those are things that I was not capable of doing back in the old day. I'd rather go fight. You know, I'd rather go, let's take the gloves off and let's go, because that's crazy. So I know I'm hopping around, but it had a lot to do with just things and decisions that I made based off of emotion rather than based off of just you stop back and take a breath. And so I've learned a lot of that in my time, and I hope that I'm using that. I trained this one kid recently. He's played Delta Soul for the last 4 years. I started with his first songs at 16. He's 20 years old, made 2 albums on my label, and now he just got a record deal. He's 20. And he took it all in. I was able to just put him on the fast track, and he was doing all the right things necessary to get to that point. Our goal was after the second album he gets signed. It just happened. And that doesn't always happen. But he did all the right things preparing himself for that. And he's in Nashville now with a deal, and I'm proud of him. So it's that's a kid that's working. You know, he's working hard. He doesn't seem to have a plan B either.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what you have to have, and it's just like that, you know, that relentless spirit of attacking, and no matter what, because things will go wrong for all of us, and
Oh,
you know, how you
gosh.
respond. You know, I saw this really great thing, and this kind of circles back to what you said a minute ago, but Paul Newman, the great actor who died, you know, obviously several years ago, and so this is an old interview, and but it was very relevant from the standpoint of what they said, like what has been kind of the secret to your success with all these films that he did and things like that. And he just said, you know, the main thing I've learned, this is after, you know, now he's in his 80s or whatever age he was, but he was good, you know, never go through life with regrets, which is what you were just said, more or less, which is, you know, you don't want to go back and get into the woulda, coulda, shoulda. right? And when you get into that, then you feel like a failure and feel like, and I would rather try, which you have done, and
Yeah.
fail than never have tried.
Yeah, woulda, coulda, shoulda, would never have mounted to Mount Everest. I promise you, the top of that.
Yeah.
If you'd have ever been that way, that's not in your DNA. I mean, I've known you long enough to know, and your achievements prove all of that. But you still can't have that in your. It just can't be in anywhere in your being. You can't be that guy. You know, doesn't
No.
work.
Well, and here's the beauty about it is that, and this is what I want everybody to hear, is that everybody, it's not, I'm not unique. You're not unique. Sorry, pal. You're not unique.
I know, I'm not special. I
No,
know.
but no, but nobody is, but we're all special. And I think that's really, and with the capability. And so then that gets down to choice on, do you want to give up something or not on your dream? Do you want to go for it? Do you want to step into something new in 2026? Right. And I think, and I'm going through some really healthy transition, but it is also a part of the land of unknown when you haven't, like, just if you're going to write a record, you don't know if it's going to blow up or not. So let me ask you this, because we are going to have to hop off in a few minutes. Where can people find you? I also know I want to promote this really quickly because I've been on it 50 times, which is called the Mississippi Minute, which is a podcast.
In a Mississippi Minute.
Yeah. And you can find that, I'm sure, on Spotify and other
You've
places.
been on it 1,000 times.
Yeah.
Also, we have a new podcast that you've been on. You're the only guest we've had
Yeah.
with Randy Harrington and Mike the Monk Guy Farrell and myself called Resonance. That you can actually, that's one that's viewable and it's everywhere you stream. It's a leadership podcast. These guys have consulted some of the biggest CEOs in the world. And I got to know them and we decided to do one. And it makes a lot of sense. Obviously, I wanted you to be our first guest. I felt like that what you've accomplished made all the sense in the world. And I was grateful that you did that. But the guys loved you, by the way. And then, I've got my at steveazar.com. You can get sick of me there. And my YouTube channel, Steve Azar Live, and that's my fan Facebook page. So it's been a good thing, big beautiful life, and I can't wait to have you down on the Mississippi soil in June.
I will be there. I will be there. I'll be there. The one thing I'm still waiting on, not Joe, my summit song.
Oh, I know we got. Oh, you have sunshine. Why would you want anything else? You love
Well, that's
that.
true. I mean, that's,
Now
if
I'll
we're
write
out,
you a summit song. I'll
huh?
write you a dang. I'll write you. Would I write whatever you want?
I want a summit song.
Okay, but
I
is it
know
going to
you.
be?
I know you. And sunshine is my. I mean, I think it was either Oprah or Taylor Swift said it was the favorite song of all time.
It
But
was all part of their thing, yeah.
yeah, it was all part of their thing. But my. I'm still waiting. I mean, that is my summit song, but I'm waiting for
Right, I got to
it.
do it.
So
I like the fact that that's my summit song. I like that title.
love it.
You're saying it right now.
I mean, I'm
Baby,
giving you
that's my
inspiration.
summit song.
There
Ah, na 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 long. Hanging on, that's my summit song.
it
Anyway,
is. That's my. See, look, dude. Right
there
there.
you go.
Magic. It's magic. All right. There we go.
When you're barely hanging on, right?
I appreciate you coming on. You're one of my dearest kind of resident friends that live in Mississippi. Well,
You're my
sure,
brother.
favorite. Yep. Yeah, we're brothers in that kind. And I appreciate you coming on and always share the love too going on your podcast. So thank you so much.